Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome to the program. I can't wait to get going with this show today. It's going to be epic. A tremendous Thursday to you. It's the 7th of March, 2024. Here's the phone number to call, 888-914-9149. Got a very illustrious guest in just a moment. You're going to want to comment on this for sure, 888-914-9149. You can also email the program, questions, comments, send me a show idea, become a shadow producer. The address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can also follow me on the X app at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. So much going on today. The State of the Union address tonight. I don't know if you're planning on watching this or not, but it's kind of funny to see the lack of decorum in these States of the Union that have it's just gotten worse and worse over the years. We might have time to talk about that. Lots of other crazy things going on. Apparently, Mike Tyson at 58 years old is going to be fighting Jake Paul at AT&T Stadium where the Cowboys play on July the 20th. That's a bizarre scenario. Boy moms, hashtag, you've heard of girl dads. What about boy moms? Hashtag boy moms. Is this a toxic trend? We'll talk about that, time permitting. But first of all, today's a big feast day. Really, really big feast day. Feasts of two amazing female saints, Saints Perpetua and Felicity. Of course, it is Women's History Month here in March. And we're going to have a great interview for you in just a moment with Mike Aquilina, who's written so much about the early church, the church fathers, and the church mothers. He was able to drop by the studio today to talk about this, and I can't wait for you to listen now to this interview with Mike Aquilina. Check it out. I want to welcome a great guest to the Cale Clark Show right now. And of course, March is Women's History Month, and today is a very special feast day. Two amazing women saints in the history of the church, Saints Perpetua and Felicity, martyrs of the early church, a powerful witness to the role of women in the early church. And joining me now to talk about this is the award-winning author of over 50 books on Catholic history, teaching, and life. He's also co-founder of the St. Paul Center of Biblical Theology and the force behind fathersofthechurch.com. Mike Aquilina is my guest today. Mike, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today because I know it's your wife Terry's birthday.
It is. We're about to celebrate. We got some kids and grandkids coming over.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, happy birthday to her, and I'll ask all of our listeners to pray for her and your whole family. And Mike, one of your many fine books is called, which you co-authored with Christopher Bailey, The Witness of Early Christian Women, Mothers of the Church. Before we get into Saints Perpetua and Felicity proper, I just want to ask you a question, Mike. I think there's a major perception kind of out there in the world, as it were, that the Catholic Church is somehow anti-woman or tramples upon women's rights, especially their reproductive rights. But from the very beginning, the church has actually been very pro-woman, hasn't it been?
It has. You know, there are certain ideas that made their way into the civilizational bloodstream because of Christianity and women's rights, women's equality. They make up one of those great ideas that entered civilization by way of Christianity. You know, St. Paul said in Christ, there's neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, woman nor man, you know, and that was a huge thing. Think about it. You know, slaves and women were not treated like adults under the legal system in Rome or Greece or really anywhere in antiquity. They were not treated as adults. They could not give testimony at different times in the public courts of law. But in Christianity, we see women emerging very early on as great heroes. You know, it starts with the Blessed Virgin Mary and so many of the other great women of the New Testament, and then it goes on from there. And Perpetua is one of those strong women, those women who are teachers of men and leaders of men in the early church.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing to point out, because when it comes to that passage in Galatians, when St. Paul says that there is neither male nor female, woman nor man in Christ Jesus, I think sometimes people might get that confused. It's more about our status in Christ, not so much our role. I mean, very often people bring up that passage and saying that women should be allowed entry into the priesthood, that sort of thing. That's not the case, but yet, there, as you just said, women were, at some level, teachers in the early church. And can you just comment on that a little bit before we get into especially St. Perpetua?
We have an equality before God as creatures and as even as his children. We're equals in a sense before God, but we are not identical. Mm-hmm. We're unequal in many ways, all of us. Some of us have more intelligence, less intelligence. Some of us have certain talents. Some of us are musical and some of us aren't musical. You know, we vary in so many different ways, and we have gradations in so many different ways. But what we see in Perpetua is someone who emerges as a leader among Christians. She's arrested for her Christianity. And you have to understand what's going on at this time. It's a time of the Severan emperors. The Severans were the emperors who finally realized that they could not crush Christianity. They couldn't crush it, but they could try to contain it. They wanted it to stop growing. And so they made it illegal to convert to Christianity. And they really focused their persecution on new converts. And Perpetua and Felicity were among a convert class in Carthage in North Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. And so she was from Carthage. And do we know anything about how she got in touch with the church initially?
No, we don't. You know, she doesn't tell her backstory. You know, what she does, she keeps a diary while she's in prison. And she just records events as they're happening. Her father enters the narrative, and he's obviously a loving father who's provided well for his family. He is obviously a man of some means. He made sure that his daughter Perpetua was well educated, and that appears in her diary because she can write and write with style. Mm. It's a beautiful work of literature, her diary. So there's a lot that we can guess about her. We don't know the conditions of her conversion, you know, what drew her to mm-hmm. Christianity. All we know is that she was set on her goal, which was baptism, and she was ready to die rather than renounce her faith.
Yeah, and not only that, but of course Felicity is involved as well. We're going to talk about Felicity in just a minute. And I think the Felicity that most people know about, well, I mean, I don't know most people, but my wife was a big fan of a TV show called Felicity with Kerry Russell back in the 90s. And I think maybe too many people know about that Felicity and not Saint Felicity. But Saint Perpetua, and you kind of alluded to this a moment ago with her writing, how rare was that in her time for a woman to write a document like this and to have that level of education and be so prominent in that regard?
Well, you might have the education and you might write things down every now and then, but for a woman to emerge as a writer and to become known, to become a best-selling writer at that time is almost unheard of. As a matter of fact, I do not know another author who's a woman writing in Latin in the third century. Perpetua is the only one I know.
Wow.
And more than that, she writes from a distinctively female perspective. She writes about birth. She writes about breastfeeding. She writes about weaning. She writes about all of these things that men have no experience of except secondhand. So she's giving us an important record of her time and female attitudes toward these experiences that only women have. It's a unique document because it was written by a woman, yes, but because it was written by Perpetua, who was quite a woman, and she had quite a style, quite a literary style. It became an instant bestseller in the church. It was immediately copied and read all over the place. And you have to understand how hard it is to have a bestseller in those days. There was no printing press, right?
Exactly.
there were no electronic media. In order for a book to be distributed, it had to be copied out by hand at great expense by skilled labor. You had to pay somebody a lot of money to do it. And then you had to get it out there. And this was at a time when Christianity was persecuted, and owning such documents was a capital crime. So people took real risks just to own her book, just to read her book, just to buy her book, copy her book. All of these things were involved, and yet it became a bestseller. It became known worldwide, translated into many languages, even in antiquity.
Mike, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. My guest is Mike Aquilina from fathersofthechurch.com. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. On our sister program, The Faith Explained, I recently did a series on St. Paul's letter to the Romans. And I recently read something on that, kind of along the lines of what you were talking about, that probably cost Paul something along the lines of $20,000 in today's dollars to get this thing published and get it out there. It wasn't cheap. It wasn't easy. And I think it was probably especially difficult, given Perpetua's status as a woman, for her to recount her history, what happened to her. Again, just talk about again what the usual status of women was in the first century. I know you're very familiar with another document called the Letter of Hilarion. What light does that shed on the situation of women in the first century?
Well, it wasn't an easy life. As a matter of fact, many women didn't live beyond their first day on earth. Many females did not live beyond their first day after birth because they were considered a drag on the economy. You know, your daughters were going to cost you something. You had to get a dowry for each daughter in order to get them married off. And you wanted to get them married off around age 11 because you wanted to get them off the family dole. You didn't want to be spending all of these money on children who were never going to have a good job and take care of you. That's the way it worked in antiquity, you know? And if you were a woman, you had no individual identity. You had no personal identity in public. Everything revolved around the men you were related to. Who's your daddy, right? Or who's your husband? Or who are your sons? These were the important facts about your life. You did not have status apart from your daddy, your husband, your sons. If you were single, you know, you were not worth much. And women had to suffer a lot in these relationships. First of all, you know, they were married off at around age 11, whether or not they had gone through puberty. And it was an abusive situation that was later decried by Christianity, but the pagans practiced it. Okay, and it's something that they considered just to be normal. So you're 11 years old, you're married to a guy who's around 30, and it's a predatory relationship. Most families that there were not big families there. You know, as a rule, that we have census records from Delphi, and they record how many people are in each family. And, you know, of all the people who lived in Delphi at that time, of all the families that were there, only 3 out of 3,000 had more than one female offspring.
Wow.
That's crazy. You know, where were all those girls? Well, they were all killed. They were all killed by infanticide on the day of their birth because their father made the decision not to raise them. They were too expensive. And again, they were a drain on the family economy. They would cost a dowry. So it's just not a pretty picture when you study the status of women in antiquity. Christianity changed that and gave women opportunities. When you look at the leaders, not necessarily or certainly not the clergy, but the people who were inventing the institutions, you know, many of the great founders of the hospital as an institution were women, right? So many of the people who were assisting Jerome in the task of translating the Bible were women. He had an army of women who had literary brilliance and were there to help him. And they were founders of religious communities. They did so many things in the early church that they could not have done outside the church. They would not have had the status to do it. They would not have had the opportunities to do it.
Yeah, that is such a great point, Mike. And it's also tragic that the more things change, the more they stay the same. We have a terrible problem in our culture right now with human trafficking, of course. And that was also true in the first centuries as well. And One of the ways also that the church protected women was insisting on the permanence of marriage. Women were often cast aside and were trafficked back in those days as well, right?
Divorce was very common, yes, and slavery was very common. At different times, the majority of the people living in the Italian peninsula were slaves, and it was legal to rape a slave. It was legal to kill a slave. The slaves had no autonomy. They had no protection, and they were often badly abused, especially sexually. So, yes, it was not a good world. I know there's one historian, Norman Cantor, refers to antiquity as a sexual paradise, you know, and maybe the 1%, maybe the very elite, the very top of the elite considered it to be a sexual paradise because they were preying on everyone who was less well off than they were. You know, it was it was not a pretty time, especially if you were a woman.
And as we talked about, the church has done so much to promote the dignity of women and their protection as well. My guest is Mike Aquilino. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. All right, so let's dive into Saints Perpetua and Felicity, especially Perpetua and what she wrote about her experiences. Take us through, kind of walk us through how she was captured and what ultimately led to her martyrdom.
Well, again, it was her time of catechumenate. She was being instructed for eventual baptism, and she was arrested with four others. And then eventually they were joined by a sixth person in jail. There are two women, and eventually there are four men there. And it's interesting that in that kind of a crowd, mostly men, Perpetua would emerge as the leader. People recognized in her the gift of leadership, and she emerges as a teacher. Now, remember, this is a woman who is not yet baptized, but she is obviously so full of the Holy Spirit. She receives extraordinary gifts. She has visions. She has dreams that signify what's going to happen when they face martyrdom in the arena. And she shares these with the others. She encourages them. She gives them reassurance. She prays for them. There's so much content there in the conversations that are going on in prison, and then as they go to their martyrdom, it gives us really a window on so many different aspects of that period. I already talked about the experience of women, but also the experience of prisoners at that time. Because the Romans did not like incarceration. If you were convicted, they wanted to put you to use. So if you were a man, you would usually be condemned to the mines. You would go down into the mines. You'd work until you died down there because the air quality was very poor. If you were a woman, you usually got condemned to life in a brothel. You know, so you know the alternative to this was capital punishment, of course. And that's what these Christians faced. The six of them would be executed in order to celebrate the emperor's birthday in special games that were being staged for the occasion. So that's what they were looking forward to. And some of them faced real terror. You know, you can imagine because the Romans were geniuses of torture and they knew that they would likely face these tortures in the arena. So they were scared, you know, and Perpetua emerges as the one who can calm their fears, who can get answers from God. And in the process, she also witnesses to us of many different doctrines of the early church. For instance, you know, the doctrine of purgatory plays much into her visions because she has a vision of her little brother who had died and his state in life. And she sees that he's in purgatory and she prays to have him released. So there's so much that we get out of that little book.
Yeah, no, there is so much there, as you said. Wow, my guest is Mike Aquilino. We're talking about Saints Perpetua and Felicity. And also the theme of motherhood and even childbirth plays into their martyrdoms as well for both. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, I mean, the problems associated with these states really really play into the unfolding of the story. Perpetua is nursing her newborn baby when she's arrested, and she needs to wean the baby, you know, and she sees it as a gift from God when the weaning goes along very easily. The baby doesn't resist it too much. And then Felicity herself gives birth while in prison and has to face having her baby taken away from her. So this becomes part of the drama. This becomes part of the drama as they approach their death. You can imagine, under normal circumstances, those are anxious situations for a couple of first time mothers. You're heading toward birth. You're breastfeeding. You feel it when you need to delay a feeding for a baby, and they're having to face all these things while they're in prison, and facing certain death ahead of them.
Yeah, even with Serenity and Joy, it's unbelievable, and wow, their story is so powerful. It's so poignant, and I think it's a perfect thing to talk about in this month, Women's History Month. And I'm aware of the great irony of a couple of dudes talking about this right now. I'm with Mike Aquilina here on the Cale Clark Show. But yeah, they're just such amazing saints of the day. And Mike, just before you go, and I know you got to get back to your wife and your family and the great birthday celebrations for Terry, but what are you working on right now, and where can people find you if they want to learn more about you and your books?
Oh, well, I'm working very much on promoting my new book on St. Patrick and His World, which is out from Scepter Publications. And
perfect
and
timing.
it's available now, right, as we prepare for St. Patrick's Day. And I try to show his life, what we know about his life in light of the history of that time. And it's an amazing story. I really just fell in love with Patrick a few years ago, and I was eager to tell his story as part of the history of that time. So that book just came out, St. Patrick and His World, and I'm spending most of my time promoting that. When people want to find me online, I'm at fathersofthechurch.com. And my books, the best place to get them is at catholicbooksdirect.com, catholicbooksdirect.com.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I'll make you a deal, Mike. It's been great having you on. First-time guest. What a wonderful conversation. I'm going to have you back, if you're open to it, to talk about St. Patrick as we get closer to St. Patrick's Day. How about that?
I would love that. So go ahead, send me the date and time, and I'll be there.
All right. Something for our listeners to look forward to. Maybe we'll crack open a couple of green beers. I don't know. Shamrock shakes. We'll figure out something, and we'll have that conversation. But speaking of partying, have a wonderful birthday celebration with your good wife. And Mike, God bless you. Thanks for taking the time today, Mike Aquilina.
Great to spend the time, Cale. Thanks.
All right, great. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show right after this. If you want to react to what you've heard so far, call in 888-914-9149. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the program on this Thursday, feast day of Saints Perpetua and Felicity. You know, I forgot to tell Mike, I called this episode Perpetua Light, and I shamelessly stole that pun from him. He had a blog post about this a while back, which I came across while doing research on the show. Perpetua Light. I like that. I like that. And of course, Mike Aquilina hangs out a lot with Scott Hahn. Scott Hahn loves his puns. So does Mike. So do I. It doesn't get much better than that. But what a great conversation we had with Mike Aquilina about Saints Perpetua and Felicity on their feast day today. If you enjoyed that conversation, you want to comment on that, give us a call, 888-914-9149. Now, of course, the other interesting thing about Perpetua and Felicity is that they were both moms. They gave birth prior to their martyrdoms. And speaking of moms, speaking of kids, and speaking of dads, you've heard of the girl dad phenomenon, hashtag girl dad. And I'm a girl dad, of course, proud card-carrying member. But have you heard about the boy mom trend, the hashtag boy mom trend? This is a new thing, and I saw an article about this that kind of caught my eye, and I wonder what you think about this. I'll share some of this with you. Is this a toxic trend? Some people think it is, the hashtag boy mom trend. Now, in the New York Times, there was a piece written by Madison Malone Kircher, and it was called, Is This Motherly Love or Something Toxic? So a huge debate about this. And she started talking about an influencer and podcast host called Avery Woods. And I've never heard of Avery Woods. Maybe you have. But Avery Woods had a video out, and she deleted the video because it got a lot of negative reaction, a lot of online discussion. But of course, it's still out there. Anything that you put on the internet, there's always a digital memory bank. It's never going away. There's the Internet Archive. So you got to be really careful, of course, what you post. And Avery Woods has over 2 million followers on TikTok. I'm not a TikToker. I've never given in to the temptation. But she posted this video earlier this month. And one of the reasons why this video is very controversial is because in the video, she appeared in the eyes of some people to prefer one of her kids over the other. And as the article states, it shows her sitting in her car after receiving her son's recent school photos. You know, kids post her school pictures. And she said this. She said, quote, my boy moms feel me on this, but my son has my heart and my soul. She also adds that she's, quote unquote, obsessed with her daughter. Quote, she's just the greatest little girl in the whole world, but my whole life, I always wanted to be a boy mom. End of quote. And then she proceeds to show all these photos of her son. So what's the big deal about this? Why is this a problem? Well, apparently online, this term boy mom or the hashtag boy mom has taken to mean a mom who takes an especial interest in raising a son, a super special enjoyment in raising a son. In fact, on Instagram, there are nearly 18 million posts right now with that hashtag boy mom attached to it. On TikTok, that boy mom hashtag has garnered 31 billion with a B, 31 billion views on TikTok of the hashtag boy mom videos. All right. Some of this stuff is a little strange. It's a little strange. Some of the videos say stuff like regarding these boy moms. Quote, you'll be his first kiss, his first love, his first friend. You are his mom. He is your whole world. I don't know what you guys think about this. Some people are really, really up in arms about this. And there's another content creator in Kansas named Abby Eckel, who also posts about motherhood a lot. She wrote a caption. She kind of wrote a reaction to this video. And she said, this type of relationship tends to not have or allow boundaries, creating an unhealthy relationship. I would never place that much pressure on my son or my sons to tell them that one of them is my heart and my soul. Now, this person, Abby Eckel, she is 35 years old. She has two sons, and she says that boy moms have, quote, a lot of negative connotations, including the idea that they're weirdly obsessed with their sons. And she thinks that this is a toxic messaging, the boy mom phenomenon. I don't get this. I honestly don't see much of a difference between what's the big deal about dads saying they're girl dads and being kind of proud of that, and these moms saying that they're boy moms. Is this detrimental to girl kids that they might have? I don't know. I don't understand this. But the New York Times piece also interviewed Sylvia Mikuki Enyart, who is a communication studies prof at the University of Iowa, focuses on family dynamics. And she said that she found the original video to be innocuous. But she is concerned about, just in general, this topic about adults posting content about their kids online. And if they do express out loud or in public sort of a strong preference for a child over another child based on their gender, like I'm a boy mom, that's my deal, that might create unintended consequences. She says, quote, it really sets up or reinforces these really gendered expectations we have for these extended family relationships. Now, she calls this communication studies prof, she calls the boy mom trend toxic as well. Said it could lead to family tensions between mothers who call themselves boy moms and their son's future romantic partners. Hey, is the boy mom going to have a problem with Junior's girlfriend or fiance or wife down the road? I don't know. To me, this I don't understand why this is a deal, why this is a trending topic. But maybe you guys have some thoughts on this. Maybe you're a boy mom, a hashtag boy mom wants to comment on this. Is this just picking on women? I don't understand. 888-914-9149 is Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Good to have you with me on the program. 888-914-9149. Okay, here's another thing that's happening tonight. The State of the Union address. Are you guys going to watch this? Are you guys interested in what's going to happen? I'll probably watch it. And the reason why is because there's probably going to be some fireworks. One of the things you guys have probably noticed is that in recent years, the State of the Union address from the president has there's somewhat of a lack of decorum around this event. It never used to be this way, but it's becoming a lot like British politics a little bit. And where I live in Canada, politics there can be some hecklers out there in the House of Commons as well. And certainly in the British House of Commons, there's all kinds of, nobody can say anything without being attacked, without being heckled, without being shouted down. It's always kind of a mess, but historically, it was never like that with the State of the Union address in Washington. But in recent decades, it really kind of has become a problem. And the bad behavior is really not confined to one side of the aisle. Both parties have been really guilty of this, by the way. And I'm just going to share some recent incidents of bad behavior at the State of the Union address. And some of you guys will remember these incidents for sure. In 2005, congressional Democrats booed President George W. Bush over Social Security. Now, there's an article, by the way, about this that came out today in Politico. It kind of details all this. In his 2005 State of the Union address, President George W. Bush made clear that he intended to pursue changes to maybe the most sensitive program in American politics, Social Security. And he said this, quote, by the year 2042, the entire system will be exhausted and bankrupt, end of quote. And he just absolutely got attacked. He was met with a chorus of heavy boos from Democrats. Everyone's saying, no, no, no. And now you might say, what's the big deal? They just said no. That's hardly major league heckling here, but back in 2005, that was really abnormal. It was considered beneath the dignity of the chamber. CNN commentator Bill Schneider said at the time it was highly unusual. I've never heard this at that level before. But as the years went on, things got a little bit more intense. In 2009, South Carolina GOP rep Joe Wilson shouted, "You lie," at President Barack Obama. Do you remember this? And this actually wasn't at a State of the Union address, by the way. So we're kind of cheating by mentioning this a little bit. But everyone remembers this one. And Obama was giving an address to a joint session of Congress. And he was making a big pitch for health care reform. And he had just got done saying that his health care reforms would not cover undocumented immigrants when Joe Wilson shouted out, "You lie," from below in the chamber. And then President Obama said, "It's not true." And then he just kept going on with his remarks. So that went viral. It was absolutely, it crashed the internet pretty much. It was quite something. So, that sort of outburst was it was condemned by both sides. Democrats and Republicans kind of said that was way out of bounds. Can't believe that did happen. Later on, Wilson apologized to the White House chief of staff. And everywhere he goes now, that guy can't give any kind of talk without someone in the crowd coming back at him. Joe Wilson saying, "You lie." So he's kind of that's his deal now. All right, let's fast forward to the next year, 2010. 2010. Now, this is an incredibly rare moment in American politics, because usually you see members of the Supreme Court, and they were always sitting there during the State of the Union address, and they're always like really stone-faced. They work really, really hard not to betray any kind of bias one way or the other. And in his 2010 State of the Union address, President Obama actually confronted the Supreme Court about something. He condemned a decision that they made in a case called Citizens United. And that was all about removing restrictions on campaign spending by corporations and other organizations. And he said this, quote, this is President Obama talking, "I don't think American elections should be bankrolled by America's most powerful interests, or worse, by foreign entities," end of quote. And everyone started applauding and stuff like that. And the judges were all sitting in the front. They're all stone-faced except for Justice Samuel Alito. And he had voted with majority, and he actually started shaking his head, and he mouthed out the words, "Not true, not true." And so that was like, that really made the news, because again, the justices don't, they never do stuff like that. They never do stuff like that. But maybe the most famous one from recent years happened in 2020, when Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, behind Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, who didn't even know this was happening, he just finished the State of the Union address, and he's waving to everybody. Well, she stood up, looked out over the chamber, she took the copy of his speech, his State of the Union address, that she had in her hands, and she ripped it in half and just kind of threw it to the side. So it was a bizarre scene, because she's sitting right next to Mike Pence, who's then the vice president, and she was just ripping mad, I guess you could say. And a lot of people denounced her for reaching just an absolute new low of decorum. No matter what you think of the president's speech, that was considered extremely disrespectful. One more. We'll give one more. Lauren Boebert. She's been in the news a lot lately for different stuff, going to the movies. That's about all I'll say about that. But in 2022, she went after President Joe Biden at his State of the Union speech that year because of the withdrawal from Afghanistan. And she talked about the deaths of 13 American service members during the withdrawal from Afghanistan, the disastrous withdrawal. She stood up and shouted at the president, "You put them there, 13 of them." And anyway, so her heckling of Biden, some people booed it. One of the Democrats shouted, "Kick her out." Biden was visibly flustered, but he continued with his speech. And then just from last year, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Georgia GOP rep, shouted liar at Biden after saying that some Republicans wanted to sunset Social Security and Medicare. And she said, liar, liar, pants on fire, essentially. So I'm wondering what kind of fireworks are going to happen tonight. I guess we will see. We'll find out. So it's always great. Theater, I guess you could say. The State of the Union address, which is happening at 9 p.m. on your favorite news channel. It's all over the place, and you can check it out if you desire to. We got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, but why don't you call in 888-914-9149. Great, great chance if you call in now that you'll get in the last segment, 888-914-9149.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to this program, the Cale Clark Show, on Thursday, the 7th of March, 2024. Talked about a lot of stuff already. I was joined by famed author Mike Aquilina talking about Saints Perpetua and Felicity. It's the feast day today of those two saints, really commemorating their martyrdom, their incredible witness. We talked about the witness, not only of them, but of women in the church and what the church has done for women to promote the dignity of women through the centuries. We also talked about the hashtag, and they were moms too, Perpetua and Felicity, but we talked about the hashtag boy mom trend. Is this toxic? It's kind of a bizarre social phenomenon. If you have a take on that, you can call in 888-914-9149. We talked about folks behaving badly at the State of the Union address, another one coming up tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern. But another interesting event that's coming up, I hit the news today, and I first heard about it from the famed MMA and boxing commentator journalist Ariel Helwani on Twitter. And he's my fellow Canadian, too, by the way. And yeah, the news broke today that there is going to be a fight between Iron Mike Tyson, the former heavyweight champion of the world, who's now 58 years old. He's going to be stepping into the ring against former YouTuber turned boxer Jake Paul. So I heard about this on Helwani's feed, and I was like, wow. I can see a lot of, I have to admit, I will probably watch this. I will probably watch this. Here's, now, this Mike Tyson is a long ways removed from his heyday. We've got a little clip from one of his most famous fights, his knockout of Leon Spinks' younger brother, Michael Spinks, in, I think, Jim, was 1988, right? Anyway, here's the clip. We'll check it out.
Tyson not afraid, as we expected, and Spinks ready to mix it up with him. Tyson along the ropes doing damage.
Michael Spinks has to keep moving because every shot.
Oh, uppercut landed inside and Spinks went down. It was the left uppercut.
I was surprised there was a body shot that put him to the canvas.
And that is the first time Michael Spinks has ever been down in a professional fight.
And he's down again and in serious trouble.
He's not going to make it. It's all over.
Yeah. Wow. I remember that like it was yesterday. That was an incredibly disappointing fight. It was one of the most hyped boxing matches of all time. Could Michael Spinks actually beat Mike Tyson? A lot of people thought that he could, but man, he folded like an accordion, and he went down in 91 seconds. That was June 27th, 1988. I remember that really well because I was in high school. The fight was called Once and For All. I still have the t-shirt somewhere, I think in my parents' basement, because I saw that fight on the big screen, and that was back in the day, kind of before home pay-per-view really took off and became widespread, and we saw it on closed-circuit TV in the Halifax Forum in Nova Scotia, which is kind of a hockey arena, and I went down with a friend. And it was a big deal. We paid a lot of money to get into this thing, and it did not last very long at all. The great Jim Lampley on the call. I think Sugar Ray Leonard was on the broadcast team, too. I thought I heard his voice. And, of course, Larry Merchant. Unreal. Anyway, so that was the heyday of Iron Mike Tyson. And I remember being so enthralled. He was such a compelling figure, Mike Tyson. Sort of had a troubled youth growing up in the New York City area. Was taken in by this legendary boxing trainer named Cus D'Amato. He was taken to the Catskill Mountains in New York, where he kind of trained him and kept him out of trouble. And he won his first 37 fights, many of them by devastating knockouts. And I remember going to my local corner store after school, and I would just keep renting this VHS tape from the corner store. And it was called Mike Tyson's Greatest Hits. And I wore that thing out, man. I wore that thing out. I absolutely loved watching Mike Tyson fight. And I don't know. I have mixed feelings about him fighting at the age of 58 against Jake Paul. I don't know. And the Paul brothers, of course, Logan Paul has been fighting a little bit as well. The sad thing about this is that I think that probably more people know about it and will be more interested in this exhibition match of sorts than they know about the actual heavyweight champion of the world right now. I bet you. Ask yourself, do you know who the real heavyweight champion of the world is right now? I don't even know. I don't even know. I have not watched boxing in a long, long time, mostly because I don't think there are any compelling figures out there anymore in the sport. Tyson Fury, another Tyson, you know, first name Tyson. He's been recently. Is he still the champ, or did he lose his last fight? I can't. I don't even know. Maybe. Patrick Alog doesn't even know right now, and he'll research it really quickly. Obviously, Tyson Fury was a heavyweight champion for a little while, but I don't know if he still is. But so these are the details of the Tyson Paul fight that are coming up. That's coming up. It's going to be on Netflix. It's not pay per view. So if you do subscribe to Netflix, I guess you got to pay for your Netflix membership. But anybody's going to be able to watch it. It's July the 20th. And I'm just looking up the details are trickling in. MVP Productions, Most Valuable Promotions, is producing the event, and is Jake Paul's own company. So he's doing quite well with that. That is for sure. Millions will be made for sure. And okay, so it's going to be at Cowboy Stadium. Used to be called AT&T Stadium. That's where the Cowboys played. Jerry's World, if you will. And I don't know. Mike, I did see a video of Mike Tyson training at the age of 58, and he still looks pretty quick, pretty powerful. But, Tyson Fury has one of the belts. Once again, the heavyweight division has been fragmented. Alexander Usyk has three of the belts. I guess there are four belts now in the heavyweight division. Remember when Tyson unified the heavyweight division? Remember back then it was WBC, IBF, WBA. Anyways, those days are long gone. But I think most people have lost interest in pro boxing, maybe because of the rise of MMA. Also because, again, I just don't think there are any compelling characters anymore in the sport like Tyson, like guys like Sugar Ray Leonard, even Roy Jones Jr. And the last time Tyson was in the ring was in 2020. He fought an exhibition match against an aging Roy Jones Jr. That was, I think it was a draw, that one. But it's interesting because these sort of old-timers matchups, not that Jake Paul is a pretty young guy, would never be able to hang in the ring with a Tyson in his prime. But these kind of, like sideshow matches are, I don't know what you think about this, whether this is a good thing for sport or not. Patrick Alog just shot me a little note saying, I think boxing would get popular again if they put the big fights on Netflix and not on pay-per-view. Well, we'll see how this one does. Well, okay, let's go to the phones right now. Paul is in Phoenix, Arizona, wants to talk about something we were chatting about earlier on the show. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. About somewhere about, well, it's not so much that, it's what I saw. About somewhere between 5 and 10 years ago, there was a picture, and they were all, at that particular time, it had to do with nursing mothers, I guess, and they were really promoting it, if I remember correctly. And the picture is a very tall lady standing up with her son. And this son is supposed to be, yeah, if I remember correctly, 12 years old, and she's nursing this 12-year-old boy standing on a box.
I remember that. That was a very controversial magazine cover. I can't remember whether it was Newsweek or Time Magazine. Patrick, if you can look that up, that'd be great. Just don't do an image search on that, because, yeah, and a lot of people are shocked by that image of breastfeeding going on that long into this child's development. That was very strange. That would be an extreme example of this this hashtag boy mom phenomenon, I guess. Whoa. I don't know. I don't know what to think of about this whole thing, whether it is a toxic phenomenon or not. I don't see the difference between guys talking about being girl dads or moms talking about being boy moms. Is this at all... I mean, if a dad calls himself a girl dad, if he's got a daughter, but he also has sons, I don't think the sons would necessarily feel slighted by the dad calling himself a girl dad. I don't know. I just think it's a good thing, because a lot of dads are kind of realizing their responsibility and the role that they play in their daughter's lives. And I don't know if it would be considered biased towards children of the other gender. I don't know. It just caught my eye. It's something that I couldn't believe was a thing. And I wondered if you guys had thoughts on that. And obviously some did. So Paul, thank you so much. Yes. And that magazine cover was May 21, 2012, created a lot of firestorm. And it was, of course, Time Magazine. But I do think we're out of time. I was going to open up a whole other can of worms. I'm not going to, though. My producer will kill me because we've run out of time. But I want you to stay tuned, though, to Relevant Radio, because the very esteemed, the very holy, and the incredibly learned Father Robert J. Spitzer is going to be the guest on Training with Timory coming up. You do not want to miss this. He is always, always amazing. You have lots of great things to say. Thanks for listening to The Cale Clark Show today. Jim Schaefer produced. Patrick Alog took your phone calls. Thanks to my guest, Mike Aquilina. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.